The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hi, everybody. It's Andy and James here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do fun facts.
Yes, we do. James, give me a fact.
Did you know that there is an extinct bandicoot whose official scientific name is Crash Bandicoot?
Lovely. I didn't know that. Did you know, James, that Upper Egypt is technically below Lower Egypt?
Incredible. Absolutely amazing. I would love to hear more about that.
Well, all you have to do is go and listen to No Such Thing as a Fish.
Where will I find it?
Oh, all over.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Hello, and welcome to Brokenomics. Now, in this episode, I am sitting down with the lovely Liana Dowding. Hello.
Hi, thank you for having me on.
No, thank you very much for coming in. Now, Liana, I couldn't help but notice that you are very, very, very good looking. Is that something that you've been able to make a career out of?
Well, when I was younger, I mean, I don't feel that way now, but when I was younger, I did make a pretty decent career out of my looks, I suppose. It's subjective.
Was that always the plan?
No, not at all. When I was younger, I wanted to be a vet, and I realised I was very squeamish. My mum wanted me to be a doctor. She's Filipino, and so you're a bit of a disappointment if you're not a doctor or a lawyer in a Filipino family. So, no, it was never ever the plan.
So that's good. So we can get into the modelling industry, you know, because it will amaze our viewers, but I don't know anything about the modelling industry. Never been involved in that. So yeah, so I mean, how do you even get into it in the first place?
Well, I don't know how one would now, but when I was 18, I was at uni. I was studying economics, and I was in my dorm room and I saw Richard and Judy. It was This Morning with Richard and Judy, and they were advertising that they had this Miss Great Britain competition going on. So I didn't want to actually put myself forward. So I kind of was like, right, I'll hover around and see if I get spotted. I've not really told many people that. It was always like, Leilani got spotted, but...
So they were doing like trials at your
yeah.
university?
Oh, right, well, okay. No, it was at the Hippodrome, Leicester Square, like right on the corner there.
Okay.
So I took the tube into London and I kind of hovered around. And actually a doorman did say, are you here for this? I went, for what? And played down. He was like, oh, Miss Great Britain auditions are going on. Do you want to, you know, have a go? And I was like... oh, do you think? And it was really sweet. He just said, I don't even know who he is or whatever, but it was down to him, really. So I went in and it was like an interview process, actually. And then they called me back for the finals. And it was like their usual thing, the bikini or swimsuit, evening dress, out in an evening. And then they ask you a question. And I don't know, but I think Simon Cowell was actually the judge at the time, one of the judges.
Because that would have been before he was... Well, maybe he was a big thing back
no,
then.
No, it would have been beforehand. So yeah. I wouldn't have known who he was anyway at the time. But no, so I left university. I was going to take a year out because the Miss Universe competitions were on at the same time. It was my end of year exam. So I took a year out. And actually, I never ended up going back. I joined an agency. I ended up doing glamour modelling because I was going for a lot of commercials and adverts and stuff like that. And all the Page 3 girls were getting them. So, and also I'm way too short to be a fashion model. I'm only like 5'6". So
I didn't know there was a height requirement.
Yeah, for catwalk, stuff like that. Probably like 5'8", 5'10" minimum.
Oh, okay.
Unless you're Kate Moss and you're very
is she
special.
Short, is she?
She's probably about 5'6", but she was one of the very, very few shorter girls. And And obviously, okay. Yeah, you have to, at that time, you had to be really stick thin as well to be a fashion model.
Right.
And I wasn't. So, yeah, I went.
In preparation for this interview, I did check some of the earlier photos. didn't spot that you were a bit chubby or anything.
Well, not chubby, but right. There was fashion model skinny, almost right. androgynous, after the beautiful, like, Cindy Crawford, right, Naomi yes. Campbell curves. It was kind of the era of that very waify looking.
So I have heard that the fashion industry modelling stuff is completely dominated by gay men.
Yes.
And they kind of like the young boy look.
Well, that was like a theory then, and I can see it now.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it was very waify, flat chest, which, you know, surprisingly, I'm not that voluptuous for a page three girl, but I definitely didn't have the frame of like a fashion model. So I ended up doing more advertising print work and, I ended up doing page three.
So how do you do the contract negotiation stuff like that? Is it, because I would imagine you're like a private contractor and...
Yeah, so it's all, I guess it would be you're self-employed. So the agent would take 20%. So I would go, I'd call up, because it was before email, it was before text, anything else. I would call my agent twice a day to see if there were any auditions. Then I'd have to take myself around London, go to an audition or casting, I suppose casting as you call it, and show my portfolio of pictures, and then they decide if they want you or not. So there's a lot of rejection involved, and you know, I mostly didn't get the jobs until I became...
Well, I suppose that's normal, isn't it? That they reject most of it because they can't hire everybody.
No, so, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, it's all part of it, and you just have to have a thick skin and not take it personally and just know you're not right for it. So it's, you know, you go around to your castings. I think there's probably like three a day all over the place. Right. And then obviously, as you get better known, you don't really have to do that because people book you directly.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I want Yarny for trainers or whatever it is that we're selling that week, right?
Or the bikini or the lingerie or, you know, all of that stuff, yeah.
Okay, so I get that. That sort of builds up. And then you use an agent or something who kind of handles the business side, or do you end up having to do that as well?
Well, you have to do all your own accounts. You have to learn, right. Which is something that a lot of young models, or say now, like the reality stars, don't know that, you know, you have to keep your expenses and you have to write your expenses off against your income. And a lot of people don't know to keep their, well, the old days, it was all paper receipts. You know, you didn't really have the online credit card.
You can do your Apple Pay thing now.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, exactly. Right. So you have to keep all your expenses, and then obviously you write that off against your income, but the agent would collect the money and do all the invoices, and then they would send you your cut minus their 20%.
Do they do the negotiation as well?
And they would do the negotion as well.
Right,
so I had an agent, her name was Samantha Bond, and she was really well known. She had Jordan on her books, and loads of all the other Page Three girls.
Hmm. Okay, so what are the kind of things that you need to be successful in this? Because, I mean, obviously one, very, very good looking, but there must be like a two and a three as well.
Well, do you know what I've got to say? Yeah. I definitely don't think I was one of the best looking girls, but I was always really reliable and I was hardworking and I would turn up to my jobs fresh, you know, not hungover from the night before.
Right.
I'd be on time and people could depend on me. And that's quite a big thing. You see, with anything now, you just hear about so many people being really flaky. And even when you get bigger, they become flaky or hard to work with.
Well, this prima donna thing.
Yeah.
Right.
So I guess I always thought, well, I better make sure I'm professional and, you know, my personality is like good and whatever.
Treat it like an actual job.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because, you know, I definitely wasn't the slimmest. I wasn't the best looking. I didn't have like the best body, but I was always dependable. So I think that had played a big part in it.
So, I mean, I remember being at university with a girl and fabulously good looking, and she told me that she was earning 250 grand a year from modelling. And I've spent the last sort of 20 years thinking, was she bullshitting me or not?
Well, you know, it is possible if she was doing commercial or print modelling, but I definitely never earned that.
Oh, okay.
Even in my prime, I don't think I got up to that. I got I don't know.
She might not.
If she was doing fashion or she was doing advertising, because advertising had massive money in it. Like, you know, if you were on a, you know, ITV commercial or something that would get played over and over and over, then yes. But then I suppose as well, if you own your own pictures, which wasn't standard for models to do at the time. So there were a lot of us that started. We would, instead of necessarily being like the magazines hiring us, like FHM or Maxim, instead of them paying you, you would pay a photographer to take your pictures, hold on to those pictures, and then syndicate them to magazines. So I did that a lot later on, and it got syndicated through to like various Maxims, kind of globally. So you do one shoot, and then you own the pictures, and then you can use a picture agency to syndicate those pictures around, like, you know, modeling, like in a bikini or, you know, lingerie, whatever.
And then presumably when you're newer to the industry, you just don't know to do that, so you just get called in by the Maxim or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. So
and
you
then
would
they
get,
do everything.
Yeah, you'd get called in.
When you just get a day rate or something.
Yeah, so you'd get a day rate. Or I mean, you couldn't always do that because sometimes, you know, I think it was like Zoo and Nuts magazine, they were like, right, we want, it's, you know, Euro 2000, we want three page three girls wearing the St. George's flag to represent England.
I remember that one.
Yeah. I say, yeah, you know, so I got called in for that. So there were times when you had to be booked specifically for certain things, but there are also times when as you get better known, you wouldn't really necessarily be able to do it when you were young. As you got better known, you could then own your pictures and you could syndicate your pictures out.
Right, okay. So, and the Maxims and the FHMs, because the Zoomers in the audience might not know what that is.
But yeah.
So before we had the internet, we had these sort of, they were called Glads Mags, weren't they?
Yeah.
They were sort of like the internet, but in magazine form. It was like snippets, loads and loads of different snippets.
Yeah, so they were like for guys, weren't they? They were a bit, I wouldn't say, they weren't as classy as GQ, let's say that. a little trashier.
But they were classier than other things you
could buy. Or you'd have the car magazines, and the car magazines would have a girl draped over the bonnet of the cars, but the girls would be in bikinis. Occasionally they'd be topless, which is like, seems like such an outrageous thing nowadays, you know, unless you're a tranny that's cut your boobs off, then you can...
Yes. Or you want a protest march.
Yeah, then that's all fine. But, you know, so you'd have these magazines that would kind of cater to young lads, I suppose, and have the chicks in the bikinis, and then they'd do calendars, and there'd be all those kinds of things.
Is that what you, when you said glamour modelling, is that that?
So there was that, and there was also, I did page three for The Sun and the Daily Star for a long
Americans
time.
Definitely won't know what that is. What is that?
So I would say that you could kind of call it the equivalent but less revealing version of their Playmates. So you had Playboy magazine and you had, like, you know, the Playmate of the Month or whatever. But she was the Playmates but were fully naked, but in The Sun and The Star, they were not. It was just a topless
girl. But the Playmate thing, that's its own thing. That you buy the Playboy or whatever for that. Whereas our page three, it was just like a normal newspaper.
Oh, yeah, it was in the newspaper, wasn't it?
Yeah. And it was just you get to page three and there'd be a lovely lady who appears to have lost her shirt or something.
Yeah, with a grin on her face and a little caption, maybe.
Oh, yes, I remember that. Now, the cheeky little caption that was sort of a bit suggestive. Well, I say a bit suggestive. I mean, there was a touch suggestive.
And they say your age, like Leilani. I was constantly 21. I never aged. I was always Leilani 21 from Bournemouth. So you'd have that, but you just pick it up in your news agents. It would be like the New York Post, but like, I remember when I first went to America, trying to explain it, and they were like, well, is that like page nine? Because page nine is their gossip column. I'm like, no, it's nothing to do with gossip. It's like a topless girl on the third page of a newspaper, and they couldn't believe it.
Yes.
Like, yeah.
Look, I mean, looking back now, but at the time, it was just, that is just what we did in British newspapers.
I know, and what's crazy to me is the outrage it caused by, I don't know when they banned it, maybe 2010s or was it late 2000s?
Maybe. Yeah, might be.
There was like suddenly this outrage and an uproar against it, and all the, you know, housewives were complaining, and then you had all these people jumping on it about you know, let's stop the page three girls, let's stop the grid girls, let's stop the darts girls. And
But now you've got
OnlyFans, which is a million times worse.
Yes.
Million times worse.
Yes.
Like, and what you can see and click on online now, like, where are the mothers complaining about that?
Well, just on Twitter.
On Twitter? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I keep getting spammed by those nudes in bio girls, and they've got, like, everything out. I'm like, oh, my God, I can see what you had for breakfast. Put it away. Like, but how do I block? And it's
not just that. You know, on Twitter, because quite often for here, when I'm doing a segment, I want to research a topic. So I go and put something in the search bar.
Yeah.
And sometimes, without realising it, like the other week I was doing a segment on Haiti. So I put in Haiti in the search bar, and my God, it was... I mean, it was solo male, basically. There was a lot of that, and, I don't really want
It's really bad, and then the bots, the sex bots, come onto people's Twitter and put all, like, proper... Yes. I get, you know, in the comments, so you're trying to read someone's, like, sensible comments... And you're spammed by the porn bots in there.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is like, you know, it's going on. And anyway, going back to them banning it was a real shame because I think a lot of the girls, it was a really good income for them. Everyone was there because they wanted to be there. Like, nothing was forced. We were there because we wanted to be there. Everyone that was able to, like, look after themselves and put barriers up never got pushed into doing anything they wouldn't want to do. And a lot of the girls were doing it, you know, to pay for their way through university, doing the grid. Because, you know, I wasn't just doing page three and doing nuts and all that. I was doing, like, the grids. I was a ring girl for, like, the boxing. I was doing all kinds like, different things. And before I got kind of well-known as a page three girl.
Because I noticed it was not the women who could actually be on page three that were complaining about it. It was the women who probably wouldn't get the invite.
Right.
That were doing the complaining.
Yeah.
And I remember at the time, actually, there was a story about one young lass who was a single mother or something like that, and she was relying on, and I think she was doing the motorsport stuff, and she would, like, turn up and do the walking around at the podium stuff.
Exactly.
And they just took it away from her because a bunch of unattractive militant feminists didn't want it anymore.
And that's what it is. And it's like, hold on a minute. You know, you say you're a feminist, so it's like women's choices and stuff. But, like, what about
not
our
choice?
You can't choose put on a cat suit and kind of shake some champagne around and, you know, go to the Grand Prix that people pay hundreds of quids for tickets for and you get to stand there, like, you know, on the grid and hold the flag. It was like...
I could never work out whether the feminists hated the men more for liking it or the girls who could do it because it wasn't them. I've never
worked it out either because I felt like they really must have hated us because they took away, you know, they took away a lot. But I think by that time that it happened, thankfully, you know, I'd already moved to America by the time they'd banned it all. So it didn't affect me, but I do put myself in that position and think, God, you know, that really... it really helped me. You know, I was able to put deposit on a hat, on a flat when I was... just 20 years old, it really helped me.
You can do that now, but like you say, it has to be OnlyFans.
And that's, you know, that's crazy and really, like...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's way
Because all the better choices have just been removed.
Yeah.
So it's just that.
Yeah.
It's either work in an office or whoring online.
Yeah, basically... Yeah. And it's really sad to see that. It's really sad to see that and to see that. But, you know, that's woke.
Yes.
Or you could be like, you know, those people that slice off their boobs and then they're in the Sun and the Daily Mail and the BBC saying how brave they are, you know?
Yes, I have no problem with that. In fact, it's funny, isn't it? Because we say it was just a British newspaper thing, the page three, but actually it was the tabloids. It was the smaller papers, not the big broadsheet ones. Yeah. But now all of the broadsheets have gone over to the new format of the smaller format. So even The Guardian is now a tabloid, effectively. It would be funny if we still had page three for tabloids just to see what The Guardian page three girl would be. It would either be a man, wouldn't it? Or somebody with blue hair.
It would have to be a man in a bikini. And
all that, all that kind of stuff. So how did the industry change over the time that you were in it? Because your Lads Mag thing, it was quite nascent when it first started.
Yeah.
And it was massive. And then it Wait, I suppose it's still here, but it just went through that explosion, didn't it?
Well, it got really big, and then it was really lucrative for a lot of us, and it led on to a lot of other things. And for me, it led on to some TV, and
I was getting
I was getting invited on as guests, and then I was doing other things like on the side because I was known. I was setting up like paparazzi pictures and that kind of stuff. But what happened was, girls saw how big it could make you. And so they just wanted to do it for free. So the money just completely dropped out of it. And then you started having a lot of the kiss and tell girls that they were the ones that were making the paper. So it wasn't the models anymore. It was like, you know, whoever would shag some footballer on one day. And then, you know, they were all over the press the next day. Mm. And you had all of that going on. So they got to a point where I was like, well, look, this is really insane. This is the only way that, you know, you can stay relevant in the tabloids. I'm sick of it. And I decided to move over to America. I think I went over in 2003. I went over in 2003.
Oh, okay. So the last one I think was maybe 95.
Maybe a little bit later.
Maybe 2000 it was big.
I mean, did we have Euro 2000? Was there a year of the football? Was there that?
Oh, I don't follow the kicky ball thing.
No. Yeah. I'm trying to picture it. I remember doing something for Zoo in for the Euro 2000, but I went to America, and I think 2003, I went to meet a guy called Norman Zader, who owned this magazine called Perfect 10 that was all natural girls in this magazine.
Were you one of the Perfect 10s?
I was. I did get to do the magazine, but he was also doing model boxing at the time. So I was like, this is great. He'll put me up, and all I have to do is go train 4 or 5 times a week, which he pays for.
Yes.
And then I have to do a fight at the end, and it's up to me how much effort I put in. Right. So that's what I went and I did, and I went over.
Seriously was the boxing taken? Because I'd imagine a model, you don't really want them too bruised.
Well, you had face guards and stuff. So you had full face guards. But what would happen, and what would happen for me is like, oh, I'll go in this. I'm not really going to take it too. But then someone would clock you, and then you're like, right. And it all snaps into place, right. And then it would like escalate. And it would happen during sparring as well. Like you'd be, you know, kind of messing around. Right. And then you get clocked and you're like, right, that's it, right, this is business. And you'd want to like give her a clock back.
So, you don't hear model boxing these days.
No, I mean, it would be.
Is that in dwarf tossing that is just, you know, it's just gone? But I want to pick up on a thread that you said. You sort of talked about how the sort of money just disappeared because girls were just doing it as a loss leader to promote other stuff. Yeah. But I mean, that kind of makes sense that you do. I can see how the market evolves in that way too. The eyeballs are the most important commodity, so you want to get the eyeballs, and then you monetize them later with other stuff. Now, it would be quite obvious to me today how you would do the other monetization in a digital age, because you'd be like saying, okay, go to my website or go to my OnlyFans or whatever the hell it is. You know, you would have other things like how did you get the other revenue streams going in a pre-internet age?
So I was really lucky because see, there's a lot of people that call like racism out as negative or whatever, but because I think I look different, I don't look like your English Rose, I stood out. And to me, it just worked absolutely in my favour. I was like the exotic one, which was like, I am more than happy to be the exotic one. I'm a bit different. Bring it on. So I would get booked. I got booked for a couple of TV things. And like I said, I did the model boxing in America. Then I would stage like a load, because I had a name, I would stage paparazzi pictures. So all the
what did you mean by that, staging them?
So this is also why I know the media is full of crap, because we would just invent stories like I don't know, me reading a self-help book in a bikini by a pool, for example, or me pretending to be drunk, falling out of a nightclub, or
are you saying that the paparazzi stuff is not actually some guy in a bush 20 miles away with a long lens?
Well, there can be that, but then if you try and be smart about it, you can work. So if the paparazzi, this is my view, if the paparazzi were going to get pictures of you, you may as well try and control it in some way. So for example, there's loads of pictures online where I look drunk coming out of a nightclub, which I would, you know, I'd be out at China White's every Wednesday through my 20s. And I'd always inevitably look like I was coming out of a drunk, but I barely drank. I had such a healthy lifestyle, but that didn't kind of fit the Page Three girl image.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.
Hi, everybody. It's Andy and James here from your next favourite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do fun facts.
Yes, we do. James, give me a fact.
Did you know that there is an extinct bandicoot whose official scientific name is Crash Bandicoot?
Lovely. I didn't know that. Did you know, James, that Upper Egypt is technically below Lower Egypt?
Incredible. Absolutely amazing. I would love to hear more about that.
Well, all you have to do is go and listen to No Such Thing as a Fish.
Where will I find it?
Oh, like, all over.
Okay, bye.
Bye.